Greg Sam Rejofsky here, Sam Nation Talk Radio 790 KABC. Powered by socialism, not this program, but instead Fidel Castro's hearse. That's right. In case you missed it, Fidel's last ride did not go over so smoothly. On the way to being interred, his ashes, they weren't even carrying his body, for Pete's sake. It was just a little box of ashes. And they were tugging it on some Soviet-made Jeep. Through the streets of Havana, and the thing just stalled right in the middle of everything. How embarrassing. But of course, the reason, so everybody's putting up things, pictures of this and mocking it as an example of how a socialist economy has literally come to a grinding halt. And the truth is, it has. And I'm still baffled. I am so, I'm not surprised. I'm just disgusted by all these glowing, tributes to Castro. This guy murdered people by the tens of thousands. And not just that, he was a moron. He picked the wrong horse. This is a guy who, well, when he took power right in the 50s, decided to ally himself with none other than the USSR. Which now, of course, we recognize and know is a totally defunct entity. So, you got to understand that's part of the poverty. You know, there's this big narrative that Castro, that the poverty of Cuba is the fault of America. If it weren't for these sanctions, if it weren't for the fact that we've isolated them, you know, we've been terrible to them. And this narrative has been perpetuated by so many on the left, Obama most notably, in normalizing, which is a liberal word for, well, reestablishing ties with Cuba. That's the big argument, right? We've contributed to their poverty. We've isolated them. We've prevented them from modernizing. It's all our fault. But I think we need to take a minute here and just step back, because I'm reminded, and as I'm reading all this stuff from the New York Times, Washington Post, and other mainstream publications, I'm struck by how absolutely moronic these editorialists are. And not just these editorialists, but these reporters, quote unquote. So Castro allies himself with the Soviet Union, which of course goes belly up, but even before the Soviet Union goes belly up, it's so poor it can't help them. Here, if you're gonna get a sugar daddy, every 22-year-old girl, everybody on, what is that website, Seeking Arrangements, they know how this works. You don't get a poor sugar daddy. That's right. You don't say, oh God, I'd like some guy who, has a nice middle-income job and is perennially unemployed. No. You want the rich guy who works for Goldman Sachs. Got the big cars and the plane and the whole nine yards, right? That's what you want. But no, Fidel Castro decided to go with the USSR, the Soviet Union, who had its own 5-year plans and was its experiment with socialism was going horribly awry. So when Castro went, he took the country over. You think about this, and this is the thing that nobody talks about. You know, Cuba had a thriving market economy. They were a free market country. They had casinos. They had tourism. They were producing cigars and other rum and different, you know, they had export sugar. I mean, they had a thriving economy. Castro takes it over. But one of the first things that, oh, by the way, every socialist does is, every socialist takes property from the rich, cuts it up and divides it up and gives it to the poor. So, for example, these are the land reforms, one of the first things that Castro did. Nobody talks about this. Yeah, they had a bunch of very wealthy people, but not very many, owned large plantations. Those plantations were confiscated and cut up into little pieces and given to poor people. See, look, this is great. We're helping the little guy. This is a good thing. And, you know, all the people that write into the New York Times, you know, the guys that, know, these all the names that you know, these guys that are all in their 60s and 70s. These are the guys that grew up with this and were looking at this and going, what a wonderful thing. What a utopia. This is how it ought to be. You know, we shouldn't have big corporate, you know, conglomerates that own everything. We shouldn't have 1% of the country have 99% of the wealth. Right? You hear these arguments. Certainly, if you went to college, you've heard these arguments ad nauseum. So here you are, and here's Castro, you know, 40, 50 miles off the coast of Florida, doing exactly that. And they're all going, oh my God, this is so wonderful. Oh, this is so, if only we could have this here. Huh. And that's the adoration. I'm just explaining it to you. But now let me tell you the reality. What happens when you give a bunch of dimwits property just fallen out of the sky? Oh, here you go. Here's some land. You know, the reality is they don't know what to do with it. And that's when famine strikes. Because you've got all this land that used to have a certain amount of productivity. The land used to produce a certain amount of food. And now it's producing 10% of what it used to. And that's the actual number, by the way. And now, no food is being made. And what happens? Yeah, people go hungry because where's the food supposed to come from? Can't come from the Soviet Union. The Soviet Union had its own problems. And now, you know, by training nuclear missiles at, you know, remember the whole Cuban Missile Crisis, training nuclear missiles at America didn't exactly make us warm and fuzzy and friendly. So now this is Cuba's this is Castro's Cuba. And I think this is where I really want to poke you snowflakes right in the eyes, okay? So this is a trigger warning right now. There's a macro aggression that's about to come out. So if you need a moment, if you need to collect yourselves, suck it all in. Here it comes. Let me mention to you a successful dictator south of us. You remember a guy named Pinochet? That's right, Pinochet. Augusto Pinochet. You remember that name? So he took over in Chile. And like Castro, was an absolute dictator, okay? He was an authoritarian dictator and ruled Chile with an iron fist. He killed some people too. I think 3,300 by some estimates. Now, Castro, it's suspected, killed about 100,000. So, you know, Castro was a little more prolific in the killing department. Actually established concentration camps and the like. But nonetheless, two guys that did some bad stuff. But Pinochet did something different. Pinochet, see, he picked up a little book by Milton Friedman and invited some Chilean economists that had trained up at the University of Chicago with Milton Friedman and decided, because Pinochet actually booted a guy that was Fidel's buddy, a guy named Allende. Booted his guy, well, actually got shot. It was kind of a bloody coup. Pinochet takes over and brings with him free market economy reforms, right? The kind of principles that we believe in, that we know can work. And what happens is nothing short of incredible. The year was 1973. Pinochet was in power for 19 years. And Chile remains today one of the, the most stable and successful economy in South America. More stable, I mean, Brazil's doing well, but more stable than Brazil. Why? Well, let me tell you something. This is interesting. See, this is it. Socialism doesn't work. It doesn't. It doesn't work when you take property away from people who have proven that they know what to do with it and give it to people that aren't proven. And this is what begot the whole revolution in Chile, by the way. You know, Allende came in, he was a friend of Fidel's, friend of Castro, and wanted to do a repeat of the Castro revolution in Chile. First thing he did, began arresting priests, Catholic priests, confiscating churches. He confiscated factories. Took them away from the people who built them and owned them and made them government-owned entities. What happened to production? What do you think happened to production? Pew! Right? And next up, what happened? Well, yeah, he began the great socialist giveaway. We hear this, by the way, from our politicians all the time, don't we? Bernie Sanders, he wanted to give everything away. And this is what Allende did, and Castro did too. Oh, free milk to mothers, free this, free that, free healthcare, free, 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 free. But as Margaret Thatcher always said, socialism and communism work just fine until you run out of other people's money. And that's what happened both in Chile and what happened in Cuba. I still never forget. I was on a train. So the difference, of course, between Cuba and Chile. Well, among, of course, the fact that one pursued a failed theory of economics, and the other one followed a successful one, is that the Pinochet actually transitioned and gave up power. It was 1980. He had a referendum on the Constitution. 1990, he stepped down as president, and it was 1998 that he finally became senator for life, retired from the military. I remember I was in high school, and I was struck about. I was 18, and I was so struck that you've got this dictator, and all my professors, my high school teachers, all liberals. They were, oh, this guy's the worst. He's horrible. He's the worst person ever. Of course, they're all the ones that are singing praises of Castro right now on Facebook. But this is this guy was their absolute bugaboo. And I remember scratching my head about it. And I said, hey, this guy's he's voluntarily giving up power. He's turning the government over to a democracy, to an elected presidency. Interesting. And so I'm looking at that, and I still vividly remember that in 1998. And I remember I was on a train. I was in Europe. I was in Austria traveling by train to visit a friend from Prague. And I was sitting in a car, and we stopped at a border, and we had to show passports. And there was an elderly couple in there, and they took out their passports, and I saw that they're from Chile. So I said, oh, hey, I'm just... We started talking to them, and I said, hey, I'm just really curious. Like, what do you guys think of Pinochet? Now, remember, you can ask somebody, you can travel to Cuba, and I love this, by the way. I love when CNN goes to Cuba and interviews people on the street and go, what do you think of life here? And they go, oh, it's so wonderful, it's wonderful, it's the best place, it's everything. And I think if they said anything other than that, their rear end would be in jail like lickety-split. That's how that works over there. Kind of like life on university campuses these days with the thought police. But we'll talk more about that later. Because it all ties together. It really does. But no, these people were miles away from home. Their country, democratic, whatever. They were just talking to me, a foreigner from the United States, on a train in Austria. I say, what do you think of Pinochet? Tell me. I'm curious. The woman almost started to cry and said, he saved our country. Now, the reality is that, of course, Pinochet is a controversial figure. And this is just, it's a good history lesson to review these things, but he's at least a figure that we have evaluated critically. We've looked at him. His crimes have been investigated. There have been, the Chilean Supreme Court, year after year, still is looking into the crimes that were committed under his regime and his rule. But the important thing when you study history is to look at things critically, to see the good and the bad. And I'm looking at these postmortems and tributes that are pouring into Fidel. To Cuba, and what I'm seeing is the liberals want to believe the very myth that Castro created. And the first thing that communism needs in order to survive is that the myth, okay? It's all about the propaganda. And beneath the surface of it, you realize there's still two tiers. There's no egalitarianism. Not everyone's created equal. There are two forms of healthcare. One that services Fidel and his people, his henchmen. And then the second one, the one for everybody else. Fidel shops and gets food from Europe and from Switzerland and Germany and all this great stuff. And his people live on rations. You know, he was you know what his estimated worth was at time of death? Castro, this estimate is worth $1 billion. At the time he died, his son was touring on a yacht in the Aegean Sea. He's got a 110-foot yacht. But nobody reports this. Nobody talks about this. These people are at home. They're starving. And that's it. And so it's an interesting thing. So when we look at this, you got to look at these things in history. You got to look at them critically. And these are the same people that are telling us about how we ought to think here at home. And that's where it's important to listen to this program and not the dolts in the mainstream media. Okay, well, we come back. Let's talk about how this nonsense translates to college campuses, because this is so frightening. Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation, Talk Radio, 790 KBC.
This is Sweet James Bergener. I listen to Sam Nation.
Hello? Hello?
Who's calling?
You're calling this number, 800-222-5222.
And we're back. Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation Talk Radio, 790 KBC. You know, I've said this before. I know a little bit about communism, given that my family comes from the Czech Republic, formerly Czechoslovakia, which was a Soviet republic under the shadow of the Soviet Union. And my father grew up during Stalin's rule, so in the 50s. And he always, my dad always would tell me that this political correctness movement resembles the political system of the era that he grew up in, because if you did or said something that offended the state or went contrary to what the ideology was, they would bring you to the public square, they'd shame you, they'd make you apologize, they'd make you kind of prostrate yourself, and they would compromise you that way. And they would basically crush you and defeat you and marginalize you in front of everybody. And there's a great article that ties this all in here, because by the way, my dad is with all things. My dad's 100% right on this. That's exactly what it happens. This is exactly how college campuses do it. They don't want any dissenting opinions. They don't want conservatives on campuses voicing dissent. And so what they do is they call it hate speech, and they call it offensive and racist and xenophobic and bigoted. And they bring you up in front of the tribunal where you must apologize and you must be reeducated. And I'm going to go through this this hour, because this is all exactly what is going on. But there's a great article that ties it into Cuba. From the National Review, a guy named Andrew Klein writes, the title of the piece is "In America, 1,000 Little Castros." So I'm looking at the piece, and the first line right away, he says, totalitarianism employs three primary methods of silencing dissenters: convert them, marginalize them, or eliminate them. And that's exactly right. Because you've got to, most people are dolts, and they're just going to go along with it. For example, let's say that, your parents are a little bit conservative. You end up on a college campus, and you go there, and people all of a sudden are telling you that Trump is the great Satan, that he basically has certainly horns, if not a bifurcated tail, and probably smells of sulfur. And you're sitting there, you're going, that just sounds good. You know what? I never knew. I never knew he smelled like sulfur, but I think I'm going to go along with it. That's a lot of people do that. They just kind of go along with it, because there are a lot of people who are sheep. Bah. So that's what they do. Now, the people that go, you know what? That's a load of, cow dung. And I don't think he smells of sulfur. You know what? A lot of what he says is actually pretty reasonable. They're now getting their fingers pointed at them, right? What do you mean? You're a bigot, you're a racist, you're a homophobe. And now the list of all the isms, right? You're a Nazi. You're a white supremacist. You're a, you know, I mean, and that's it. And so now you marginalize that person because you heap onto him. I'm saying a him. I don't mean to be sexist, but generally, I'm assuming the ire of these liberals are mostly at conservative males. So the pronoun choice is not necessarily accidental. But you know, they heap all the shame and all these and it's in an effort to really just stain that person in a bunch of attributes that are absolutely no way based in reality, are false, but are designed to make that person toxic to his peers. And then, of course, comes elimination. Because you know what? They don't like you. If you withstand all of that, well, you just cannot be corrected. And schools are kicking people out. They're getting rid of professors. I tell you, Castro put people in camps, and these schools are putting people in rubber rooms, and they're suspending people, suspending students, and kicking out faculty. And this, of course, in an environment where free speech is supposed to be everything. So I want to get into it, because this the romance that the left has with the, you know, socialist utopia is so disturbing on so many levels. Oh my God, there's so much here, and it all comes down to, I'll talk to you about Vermont, Bernie Sanders. Hey, we are gonna be back after the break. John Wolf with the news, Sam Rejofsky, Sam Nation, Talk Radio, 790 KBC. The Secretary of State position is important, especially because Trump promises an aggressive foreign policy. But I really think that there is a deliberate attempt here to create fatigue in the news media, yes, to wear people out. It's almost as if Trump has gotten into a car and attached a bunch of little cans to the bumper and is driving it around the neighborhood. You know, and all the dogs are chasing the cans.
Talk Radio.
KABC.
Jofsky, Sam Nation, Talk Radio, 790 KABC. Talking about Castro and how this really it kind of intersects with what's going on in college campuses right now. And when I say this, I mean what Castro's and other socialist regimes and communist regimes did to free speech rights, and namely that there were none. And I was just before the break, kind of breaking down what, you know, how people, you know, were broken down, marginalized if they disagreed or ran afoul of the regime. And what's great, there's a terrific piece. What is this in? It's a blog or a online magazine, 7 Days Vermont. So it's kind of, it hasn't really been picked up by the national news yet, but it's this UVM professor, University of Vermont professor, who is. By the way, a Hillary Clinton supporter, has describes himself as a recovering liberal, and so still voted for Hillary Clinton, I guess. But he says he's just from his experience at the University of Vermont and everything that's been going on there, he's slowly turning into a libertarian. Now, my ears perk up at this, so I go, well, I wonder what's going on with all this. And apparently, it all has to do with this new system, this pilot project that they've been running the last few years, called the Bias Response Team. Now, this Bias Response Team actually has been picked up by a lot of college campuses. Now, what is it? It's charged with investigating bias, discrimination, and harassment on campus. That sounds good, right? I mean, what possibly could go wrong? Well, it turns out it's all about how you define what bias is, discrimination, okay, and harassment. And it seems the way that UVM and most college campuses describe it is anything that hurts anybody's feelings, especially when perpetuated by a conservative against a liberal. Let me explain. So let's say that this, they launched this thing back in 2014, so it's been going about 2 years, and it's to process complaints about racism, sexism, and homophobia on campus, all right? This is now, this is what their own literature and websites say. And they want to eradicate speech that hurts and intimidates others. Now, here on Sam Nation, we believe in the time-tested adage that sticks and stones can break my bones, but words can never hurt me. Do you remember that? I remember saying that on the playground, and you know what? I meant it, although I wasn't much of a fighter. So I just, so yeah, so sticks and stones really could break my bones. But words, you know, do you remember getting your feelings hurt on the playground? And remember what people would tell you? They'd say, well, yeah, that was a mean thing to say, but you know what? It's, you know, deal with it. And that's what people told me. But we have become so obsessed about how we feel, how things make us feel. And if we have a feeling, it's valid. No matter what. And by the way, when it's supposed to combat racism, sexism, and homophobia, do you see what I'm saying? How this is really targeting conservative speech? I mean, and that's not to say that conservative speech is homophobic or is sexist or is racist, but conservative speech is being labeled that by liberals in order to silence it. You don't hear conservatives saying, well, that was the most racist thing ever. Even if it was blatantly racist, and liberals say racist and horribly homophobic and xenophobic and anti-Semitic things all the time, but they get away with it, obviously, because they're, you know, they're exempt from the thought police. But you never see, you never hear conservatives complaining about their feelings. Conservatives are too busy dealing with reality and how things really are. And they're, you know, they work in a job. They got mouths to feed at home. Plus, they got everybody else's mouths to feed that are living off the government. You know what? So here's what it comes down to. And this is the critical thing. This is where the college campuses truly intersect with Soviet socialist communist regimes that reports to this thought police department can be made anonymously. It is the hallmark of a police state. Turning your neighbor in anonymously, getting him in trouble, censoring him, silencing him. And that is exactly who we are not as a country. All right, more on this when we come back. Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation, Talk Radio 790 KBC.
This is Sweet James Bergener. I listen to Sam Nation.
Of the smartest listeners in Southern California. Talk Radio 790 KABC.
Well, Sam Rogowski here. You know, when we talk about sticks and stones can break my bones and words can never hurt me, here's a good little recollection of what can happen when it's all about breaking bones. Apparently, there was a student at the Queensborough Community College in New York. Now, this student happens to be black, and he also happens to have gone to school one day wearing a Trump hat. That's right, one of those signature red Trump hats that say, "Make America Great Again." Well, what he did not have was a great day that day because he was attacked by fellow students and almost burned alive. And when he went to make a police report with the school told him, you know, yeah, we're just not really that interested in making a report. You know, we gave him the runaround, had to escalate it, ended up with the dean of students, and around it went. See, they're interested more about words that hurt people's feelings when they're targeting liberals or when they're targeting liberals' feelings than they are about actual incidents of injury against conservatives. Go figure. Now, I'll tell you what. Somebody sticks and stones break your bones. Who are you going to call? That's right. You want to make sure that, I'll tell you, he's a, that's right, Sweet James. The only lawyer to trust, the lawyer we trust here on the program. Now, you don't want to be, you don't want to be talking to, yeah, that's right. Just, insurance companies are like liberals, you know, it takes a fool to look at, try to communicate with them in any way. Just do not engage. Don't talk to them. That's right. Don't talk to them. Don't call. Don't give them any information. Just make sure you talk to your lawyer if you get hurt. So if you've been at, you know, if you've been in a car accident or you've been in the wrong neighborhood wearing your Trump hat and you get beaten to a pulp, call Sweet James because he'll protect you. What do you do? Give him a call. 800-881-2021, 1-800-881-2021, or visit his website, sweetjames.com. All right, Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation, Talk Radio 790 KBC. And talking about this program that they have at UVM, University of Vermont, and also other campuses. Now, the one at University of Vermont is called the Bias Response Team. And it's this special department set up just to investigate people's hurtful speech, discriminatory speech. That's right. Let me give you an example of what this little organization will do. So in 2014, there was a student. Now, a student goes to the dining hall, you know, where they serve that usually pretty terrible food. Although some colleges have better food. And this dining hall was trying to be fancy. Well, I say this because they're in Vermont, so I don't know. This could be fancy for Vermont. Don't laugh. They had Taco Tuesday. And I guess one of the workers there, dining hall employees, brought a fake sombrero, a sombrero and a fake mustache, excuse me, to wear on Taco Tuesday as they were serving these tacos. And one of these snowflakes, one of these absolutely, now this is just wretched snowflakes, boo-hoo millennials, is there going to the dining hall, getting tacos. And he sees the guy with the sombrero and the fake mustache, and his feelings were hurt. That's right. It happened the blink of an eye. His feelings were hurt. You know why? Because the student saw the outfit not as necessarily being like festive or, you know, happy, but as representing, according to the article, representing an entire culture in one way. That's right. Because all people that serve tacos have fake mustaches and sombreros. Well, you know what happened? That's right. He tattled on the poor guy working at the cafeteria. I mean, how low can you go? You don't tattle on the cafeteria worker, you idiot. And you know what happened? Just like in communist Cuba, the poor dining hall employee gets sent to a re-education camp. The offender had to attend a diversity and inclusion training in which they discussed why the staff member thought it would be funny and why the student didn't. And here it adds also from this horrible administrator, and it resolved in a really positive way. But you know the critical thing that I read here? Is the guy who wore the hat gets sent to the re-education training to be explained to why it hurt the student's feeling, and they didn't bring the student in. So it's not an effort to make two people understand each other. It's an effort to punish. And this is wrong. Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation, Talk Radio 790 KBC. Trump, from the beginning, did something totally and completely different from all the other politicians that ran on either side of the aisle. Maybe with the exception of Bernie Sanders. He spoke to all Americans.
Say, what is this?
You know what it is.
790-790-790-790-KABC.
And we're back. Sam Rejofsky, Sam Nation, Talk Radio 790 KABC, rounding out this Monday night with you on the air. And by the way, I just want to say, I really appreciate you. I appreciate you for listening. You know, we just get an hour a day, most days, but it's great. I love hearing from you. I love getting emails. So please, sam@samnation.com, Twitter, Sam Nation. Instagram, Sam Nation, you know where we are. Just you know how to find us. But I know you're out there, and I hear from you, and I appreciate you, and it's good to have you on this hour every night together. So thank you. But look, this craziness with our schools. This is our next generation. I mean, this, you know, that whole thing where people say, look, the kids are our future. And they literally are. I still think of myself as a young person, but I'm, you know, I've been out of college now for a while, or at least, you know, yeah. I mean, I went back to school for law school a little bit later, but I mean, this is it's interesting because you ought to, and I always say this, you ought to be able to go to school and be challenged. And of course, not just be challenged, but do challenging. Be the person that says something provocative. And one thing that when we were talking about the University of Vermont in that article, the professor that's tackling it head on, he had a great quote. And I love this because he says free and open discussion is the best way to attack bad ideas. And this is what I've been saying here all along. I said, look, if you say something that's absurd, or if somebody, maybe not you, because everything you say is perfect, but somebody else says something that's totally asinine, let that person, let that thing that they said, let that idea fail in the marketplace of ideas. Let it be discredited on the open market. But don't have that opinion silenced. Don't have it just, you know, pushed out of the way. And then finally, to me, one of the greatest absurdities of the week is this this clash between two great socialist liberal ideas. On one hand, we're going to create this safe space college, right? We're going to create this place where we're going to teach people about microaggressions, and we're going to coddle, you know, our young little snowflakes, make sure that nothing comes along to melt them. And on the other hand, we're just gonna bring everybody into the country. We're gonna open the doors and welcome everybody in giant melting pot, and everything's good. So we're doing melting pot over here, but then we're definitely not wanting to melt any snowflakes on the left, right on the left. So what happens? I don't know. This is this story. This even Reason magazine is poking fun at this because apparently it's emerged that the Ohio State knife attacker, you know, that Abdul Artan guy, a Somalian who decided to unleash a terror attack back on November 28th. Well, he was, the week of the assault, about to deliver a group project on microaggressions. That's right. That's right. He was enrolled in a class called Crossing Identity Boundaries. And he was about to give a group presentation on microaggressions. Well, instead, he decided to attack his fellow students and cause mayhem on campus, all in the name of his radical religion. Now, I bring this up only to say, isn't the purpose of all this education to get beyond? I mean, isn't being in these classes and learning about crossing identity boundaries, isn't that supposed to help prevent this kind of stuff from happening? Is this, in fact, is this an example of a class like this failing at its stated objectives? But then again, just like Fidel's Cuba, much of what liberals promise fails ultimately because it's all just one giant pipe dream, not based on any reality, in fact. We'll be back tomorrow night with more delight. It's always great to be with you. Sam Rejofsky, Sam Nation, Talk Radio, 790 KBC.
790. KABC.